Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
I think that every movie could be improved if you open a door and Mary Steenburgen is there and like greets you with like a happy hello with like the most joyful smile on her face.
She has great smothering parent energy.
It's
because you
so
love
good.
Her, but it's
yes.
so immediately triggering. You just like,
oh,
wanna...
is it triggering?
I
felt like a warm blanket. I was like, hello, mother. Like, welcome me into this home.
I guess we just revealed a lot
about like our
maybe
our own home lives
in the span of 30 seconds.
Did you not like? I feel like she brings so much like love
she's
and
great.
Joy to
she's
the movie.
The best.
She well, yeah,
but she's a lot. You know, that's the whole thing. She's a lot.
You think she's a little too smothering?
I think
versus
that,
the Victor Garber smothering.
I think that Mary Steenburgen understood what she
did
was
she
meant to
do. Did she understand the assignment? Is she like your Spotify Wrapped?
Yeah. We make that joke in like. Four episodes from now too.
Oh, do we actually?
Just so you know.
Oh.
Okay.
Well,
we're recording out of order.
Fuck me.
As you can tell.
Well, behind the scenes.
You know, with the holidays coming up, it's like we gotta go home. Mm-hmm. People's
holidays.
Schedules are packed. Yes, this is the final installment.
Yes.
In
ever.
Our...
This is the last podcast episode we're ever doing.
It's the final installment in our holiday. Mm-hmm. Covering of movies. It's been a lovely 3 weeks
yes.
here with you, decking the halls, donning our gay apparel,
mm-hmm.
making the Yuletide gay, et cetera, et cetera. Hi.
Hello.
I'm Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
And joining us today for a very special episode is Bobby Finger of Who Weekly. It is an honor to have you here.
Truly.
Hi. It's an honor to be here talking about Happiest Season, the last of your holiday specials. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, have to go out on a
wow, it's
controversial
such an honor.
One.
Well, we were very disappointed that we couldn't cover this film last year when it like came out.
Came out.
It didn't work out with like, you know, the timing and we were home. But I'm glad we waited to cover Happiest Season because, oh boy, did people have things to say about this movie.
A year of reflection.
Yeah, I felt crazy when this movie came out because I felt like one of the few, I guess I, you said we're going to do the Letterboxd thing later. I haven't looked at the Letterboxd like average.
Yeah.
So when I watched this, I was like, this is great. What's everyone's problem? Like, I guess I understand what people's problems might be. I just completely disagree with the problems.
Yes.
I had a great time
not...
watching it again, too.
Yeah, we are not Happiest Season haters. We both really
no.
like this movie. I remember
oh,
I was so scared to mm-hmm. watch it because like I think I watched it a couple days after everyone like started yelling about it online and mm-hmm. we were like, this is mm-hmm. delightful,
like
this
what do you mean this isn't a fun time,
a great movie. Yeah
it's a great Christmas movie. It's a little sad, like the best Christmas movies too. I love that. Yeah,
mm-hmm. exactly. That mm-hmm. was going to be my question, is like, do you have favorite Christmas movies? Like, what's your go-to Christmas season movie?
Do I have favorite Christmas movies? I have a whole list of favorite Christmas movies that I watch every year. It's like, as the years have gone by, I guess I've added a couple new ones, but I've also pared it down a lot. I always make a point to watch Love Actually.
Yes.
While You Were Sleeping, The Family Stone, and
oh yes,
the most recent edition is The Best Man Holiday, because I think The Best Man, I guess actually the most recent edition is Happiest Season from last year, because now it's 2 years in a row. I guess we're almost gonna have a trend here. But
there you go.
I think something that all of those movies have in common, like While You Were Sleeping, The Family Stone, Love Actually, The Best Man Holiday, Home Alone 2. I do love Home Alone, but it's as I've grown up, it's less important to me than the other ones, just because like I like a Christmas movie that's a little sad.
Yeah.
And all of those Christmas movies are a little sad, if not quite sad. Happiest Season doesn't quite have it, but I think that in that final, you know, the big breakdown at the end with the family, and then the heart to heart that Dan Levy has with Kristen Stewart, I think is just it adds some tears to the season, and I think that there should be tears in this season, this time of year. We should be crying. So any
movie
that helps me activate those tear ducts, I'm all in on.
Yes, Christmas is a melancholy time. It should feel like, I think especially as you get older, like I feel like, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, it sort of kicked in when we were like, oh, we're adults now, and like Christmas
melancholia season
suddenly like kind of a very different thing. Yeah, like it's not as exciting as it used to be. It does have this weird sort of like air of like sadness and stress with alongside all of the cheer. So I totally agree in that like the best holiday and Christmas movies are the ones that like can really tap into that, and it's great. But this is also like happiest season is sort of like a not, I don't want to call it a Hallmark movie because I feel like that sounds like an insult, which I don't mean it that way. But it does the tropes and trappings of the season very well, which I think threw a lot of people off.
No, totally. I think people like came in with the expectation because they were like, oh, it's this queer movie. It's going to subvert all of these tropes and stereotypes. And it's like, no, it's going to like completely lean into them, and that's like the point of it almost. Like it's not trying to be different, which is like, so it's like a warm blanket kind of. I feel like with like rom-coms or things like this, like you're so used to the tropes, but sometimes it's so nice to see something just executing those things well, and like Christmas themes and just things like that where you're like, I know that this is a trope, but like, do I care? Not really.
And you watch holiday movies for the tropes. Like that's why you watch rom-coms. You want to see them like, you know, break up and get back together and have this big sweeping kiss. Like you're craving that. I think it just caught people by surprise, shockingly. Bobby, did you see this movie like immediately? Were you able to kind of beat the social buzz?
I was trying to remember that when I was watching it again this morning. I think I watched it. I think I like begged them for a screener and I think I got it, but I didn't watch it until the day it came out because I was like, I actually don't have time to watch this. Like, what was I doing in COVID? I didn't leave my apartment over Christmas. it was like my first ever Christmas without my family or like a family. But I think I watched it just the actual official day it came out. And by that point, there wasn't that much buzz, but there was a little bit. Some people I knew had watched it before and they were like, eh, too. No, that was good. And I fell into the latter camp. I was just like, great. And like when it's cold outside and you're sad, like, and you've had a big meal, like it's just, this is the perfect movie for that environment, you know, like it's the perfect movie to just like cuddle up with, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love it.
What was your experience with it?
I was so excited because I was like, oh my God, it's like a gay Christmas movie. I feel like it was one of those movies that I was like,
I feel like not only that. Yeah, sorry. I don't want to like interject, but it's like a gay, but it like has like a lot of star power behind it because like I feel like the Netflix just had straight, what was it?
It's called Single All the Way.
Straight All the Way. Single All the Way. Great.
Thank you.
But like that, it's kind of like lesser knowns, and I feel like a lot of like sometimes Christmas movies don't have that, but this has so much buzz because it's like, oh, it's fucking Kristen Stewart, Mackenzie Davis, blah blah blah. Sorry,
it's because it's not sort of like a direct to like Hallmark or
movie. It was during that part of COVID where theatrical movies were just like suddenly streaming, and so I think we were getting that like whiplash of like new movies are coming up, but we're getting new movies that were supposed to be in theaters that have a very specific look, and new movies that were always supposed to be streaming that have another kind of specific look. And so I think at least I had forgotten kind of that it was supposed to be a theatrical movie. And so when it starts, you're like, oh, this is like a real movie. Like this is a capital R real movie. And I think that's sometimes enough. And it definitely was during COVID where it's like, oh, this feels like a movie that I should have seen in the theater. This isn't 100%. Just, you know, did you watch the Kristen Davis Rob Lowe Christmas movie that's in like Kenya with the elephants? It's like these movies that look like Netflix movies, you know, like that has an aesthetic that I despise. So anything that's counter to that aesthetic is so nice.
I totally agree. It like has, even though it's basically set like in Pittsburgh and then what, the suburbs of Pennsylvania, it has like a sense of scope to it. And like it was supposed to be like TriStar. It was this whole big sort of like studio indie type film, which is where the four quadrant aspect of it comes in, because like we've considered talking about Hallmark Christmas movies, which we
it's
haven't
like the
yet
cheat is like, is it might. Streaming, does it count as four quadrant?
I mean, we cover plenty of streaming movies because like otherwise our catalog would be extremely limited, but it's like it did feel like it was supposed to actually like serve a big audience. I would have been so interested to see like what this did theatrically.
Totally.
Maybe better for better or worse though, because I can also imagine this like low-key
kind of just like being a flop.
A flop, which is sad, but
totally. So, what was your experience?
We'll never know. Yeah. Okay. Every year, there's a couple of movies that it's like, regardless of whether or not they need my support, I just feel very strongly that I should defend them before I've seen them. Yeah, you know, I try, I do my best. And it's like, yeah, me and my 400 Twitter followers are like really doing a lot to like bang the drum for these movies. But like, I sometimes feel very strongly that like, I want to say that this movie is good because I think more people should watch it. And Happiest Season was one of those movies where I was like, it's this big like studio queer rom-com, like it has my fucking girls in it, like I love Clea DuVall. I was so excited. Aubrey Plaza is one of my biggest celebrity crushes ever, so I was very stressed as a result going into it. But
you're having like a lot of bi panic. You're just
like a lot.
Oh my god, so everyone's attracted.
But I really like, after I watched it, I was like, I think that I liked that, but I'm going to sort of like make myself be extra complimentary about it because I want more people to watch it. But I do feel like watching it a year later without all of the self-inflicted pressure that I definitely needed to put on myself, it's delightful and I'm very happy. How about you, Jordan? Hit me.
Yeah. So I watched it like the day it came out because I was trying to get like, you know, I was excited. It was a Christmas movie.
Gotta get on top of it.
I watched it with my sister. We were both like, cute, fun. I don't know. It was just like a nice like Christmas watch. And then I went home and I watched it with my parents. And it was definitely a different experience watching it with them. What I was laughing at, what they were laughing at. Like our overall walking away. My dad was like, I see why you showed me that movie. And I was like, why? And I was just like, because you're queer. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, but like, it's also good. It's a good Christmas movie. Like, that's your takeaway? So that was fine. But, you know, I feel like I got like very wrapped up in like following the drama, but not like participating, like watching it from afar.
It was a little like staring into the sun.
Yeah, because like people were like, this is so problematic for the queer community. And I'm like, is it though?
Well,
but we'll talk about it.
I'll just say, I don't want this to just be a controversy.
No. Totally.
But we're here to talk about what we
like. But like everything with Aubrey, everything with like their relationship, you know, there was a lot of like discourse. But like a year removed, it was like so pleasant to watch and go back. Like, all of that was just head empty, just enjoying this movie, which was really nice.
Yeah. Long didn't listen. If you haven't watched this movie, like, give it a try. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. End the ep there.
Great. I mean,
there
thanks,
was a
everybody.
Point, though, that you made.
Yes.
On the Pittsburgh thing.
Pittsburgh!
Do you think this movie should have been in New York City and the Hamptons, or do we think that the Pittsburgh and, like, suburb works?
I mean, look, my family... some of my extended family lives in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, but like affluent suburbs, middle of nowhere. It's like there's just trees for, you know, an hour. And then all of a sudden there's like a nice little town. And then there's trees for another hour. Like, it's very weird. And my aunt lives in Pittsburgh. And I was very happy.
Well, connection here.
Because I feel like if I was to bring my girlfriend, my hypothetical girlfriend, home for Christmas in the Pennsylvania suburbs, this is like basically what would happen.
Interesting.
The country club literally like made me break out in hives. It's a whole situation. So I think that the specificity helps it. And I like that they're not too, like, it's not the, I like that it's not the
that
Hamptons.
That it's not the Hamptons.
Yeah. What made you? Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking because Bobby, go for it.
Oh, yeah. No, go ahead.
I was just saying because it kind of has, like, I just feel like it, like the holiday or movies like that, I feel like it could have just had like the classic big city going to a small town outside of it was the only thing that I was thinking. And I just wondered if like their wealth would have transferred cleaner to something that was a little more upper crust. But then I also like that it's not
upper crust.
It's a little not. But I have another comment on their wealth that we'll get to later. But
I don't know.
Bobby, what do you think?
I think I feel like I'm on Brooke's page because I feel like if it were New York and the Hamptons, it's like too recognizable as upper crust and super wealthy. Whereas like, of course, this family is like coded as like quite rich and quite comfortable, even though I think Victor Garber has some line where he's like, I sunk all my savings into this campaign. And it's like, sweetie, fine. Like, I can tell you're doing fine. But like, but I think it... Pittsburgh, to me, it's only vaguely recognizable that that's Pittsburgh. And I'm going to assume that to a lot of the country that doesn't live in the Northeast, like, oh, that looks like it's vaguely Northeastern and it's a big city. But I think there was like a sort of generic nature to its big city, small suburb area that made it a little more approachable almost. Like,
yeah,
it may have been a little glitzier in New York, but also I also like that I like movies about city people that aren't set in New York and LA. Like, I like when the city is something a little off the beaten path, like Pittsburgh, you know? Like, I like that her big city was Pittsburgh and not New York City, Manhattan, LA. Yeah, you know?
Right.
It's only like a slight, it's like a degree away from the norm, but I appreciate that it was a degree away from the norm, you know?
Yeah.
Totally.
I think it kind of helps milk the drama too, because it's like you girls like really feel like you're under so much pressure from like your Pennsylvanian, really like small time political parents. Like, it's going to be okay, I promise you. It's not like he's running for mayor of the Hamptons or New York City.
Right.
yeah. Also, not to be a dumbass like industry person, but like much cheaper to shoot in Pittsburgh than it is to shoot in New York City.
Yeah.
It's great. This is like a proper, I mean, it has like studio indie money, but like it's still an indie. Like, there's a bunch of little like production companies involved in this, and like there's this whole big thing with like they moved it to Hulu, but they like kept international theatricals, and it opened like number one in a bunch of random countries. To number one in Australia.
Cool. Good for them.
Australia. Right.
Bunch of allies down under.
Wow.
Gotta love it.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's like it was meant to serve like
a wider audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good. I like it. What were you going to say about the Welsh? Because I've been thinking about it.
No, yeah.
I got to know.
Two things. One, that house that they have, like great, you know, huge, big house. Mary Holland's character would not be living in that room. Like, that is not a normal bedroom. Like, I know that she's like the outcast of the family,
the basement
but she
room?
Would, yeah, she would have like a normal bedroom, or
there
would
was
have
enough space.
Yeah.
Yes. And they would have like a nice guest room, or they would have something that was like normal.
Is this really what you want to take up airtime talking about?
Absolutely. It was upsetting. I was like, that room does not fit. And the second thing was, within that room, there was a Cape Cod poster, which I was like,
that's very nice.
I see you.
Jordan's a Cape Cod
I'm a
native.
Cape Codder, so I was like immediately drawn to it.
You'd never be able to tell unless you spent 5 minutes with him that Jordan is from Cape Cod. But it's cool.
Okay, that was the big thing on Wealth, was just like there would be some space for Kristen Stewart to go sleep somewhere normal.
Thank you. Your
did that not
your
bump with you at all?
Noted.
No.
No.
Wow.
That's not
huge walk away.
What I'm thinking about when I think about this movie. But
you are thinking about Mackenzie Davis, and you're like, tall.
She's so tall. So tall. I'm going to find out how tall she is for real.
Is she in a wig in this movie? Because was this like filmed after the Terminator thing? Because I'm not even a wig person who like always notices like fake hair, but there was something a little strange about her hair in this movie, and I was trying to do the timeline with her Terminator movie, which she had short hair in.
Yes.
Is it fake hair, and was that distracting? It was only, I don't remember it being distracting last year when I watched it, but it was quietly distracting this year, you know?
It was a little distracting.
I think it's okay. Either like just terrible bangs, or it is like a bad
the bangs,
wig.
Yeah.
And it's more concerning that I can't really tell which is which.
Did she have long hair in Tully?
Yeah, but she has like, you know, like the blonde sort of like crop that she usually has.
Uh-huh.
That's like her Tully hair. Mm-hmm. And I feel like her turning her hair, which was right before this movie,
the hit film.
So I think it's probably a wig.
Yeah.
It's not a great one.
No.
You know whose hair looks amazing though? Kristen Stewart. That bleached
Kristen Stewart's hair. Oh my God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's maybe too
it's
many like
hair.
Side bobby pins going on. But
I love it. Every outfit that she's like bringing in,
okay.
Incredible.
The outfit that she wears at the like big dramatic Christmas party, that's like
the
suit
jacket.
With
yeah.
the undone tie and the open collar. Oh my God.
It's for the lesbians.
Oh my God. It's so good.
It's like I saw, I'm not going to be able to quote, I think I saw it on Twitter. I don't think I saw it on Instagram, but it was like just the screenshot of her, you know, at the bar in that outfit with the undone tie and the hair doing what it's doing. Mm-hmm. And it was something sort of like, it's time for this. It's like this season or something like that. And I realized when I saw that tweet and that had, you know, enough engagement to like appear on my feed, I was like, this actually, even though this is maybe at least like 10% in jest, like it's actually sort of iconic this quickly. Like that outfit is quite memorable. Even if you mm-hmm. didn't like this movie, I think you remember that scene and you can agree that Kristen Stewart looked hot in that scene, and yes. that it is the hottest moment of the movie. Just her in absolutely. That outfit, you know,
yeah.
like
absolutely. With the drink and like looking perturbed. It's a yeah. whole energy. Yeah. It's great. I totally yeah. agree. I mean, I even remember, so Aubrey Plaza has like a children's book that came out this Halloween, and she was like, mm-hmm. you know, going around promoting it at book signings and stuff. And someone asked her about Happiest Season, and she was like, well, there needs to be a sequel. Like, my character needs to find love too. And then I feel like on Twitter, mm-hmm. all I saw was Happiest Season for like 3 days. So
hey.
it's sitting in the cultural consciousness. It stayed relevant. Yeah.
I mean, I would watch that.
I would happily watch it. Yeah.
I the happiest watch it. Yeah.
Happier. Sorry, happiest. Sorry.
I know, because they yeah. already called it Happiest Season, so you either gotta knock it down a peg.
Happiest Seasons.
No, God. Ew. Terrible.
Maybe.
We'll have to see.
The look that Kristen Stewart gives Aubrey Plaza when they like bump into each other outside of the bathroom mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. so good.
The first time that they see each other.
It's like, oh, women. Yeah. Wow.
Women. We love it. Should we just rip the Band-Aid off? And like, we are famously bad at talking about plots because we assume usually if it's a movie that a lot of people have seen, we're like, you get it. You know what's up. Mm-hmm. So should we rip the Band-Aid
oh,
off?
Oh, like what the plot is?
And no, and talk about the Aubrey Plaza
oh, the thing. That?
Should we talk about it? So then we don't have to like talk around it later.
Sure,
you know what
sure.
I'm
it's like, yeah, we're flirting with it. We just have to like cut to the chase.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Sure, do it.
Okay, fine. I'll fall on my sword and go first. Although I would happily risk it all for Aubrey Plaza. I think that it would be a weirder movie if she and Kristen Stewart ended up together, because it's just mm-hmm. simply put not that kind of movie. And yes. it would be really mm-hmm. depressing if she spent all this time with Mackenzie Davis's family and then decided to dump her, and we had to get rid of all these characters who we spent 90 minutes with. Just doesn't make sense. And
it's
when
awkward.
People yeah. say that, I'm like, you don't, like, it just, it wouldn't work. Although I would just like to say that if Aubrey Plaza is looking for someone to date, there are plenty of available people out there, just putting that out into the universe. But I think it, the way that it works is the way that the movie is designed
yeah. No, yeah.
to work.
It wouldn't fit within the confines of this movie, like rom-com.
Yeah. 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 The other thing I'll say is that it's very queer thing to like have platonic friends that you're kind of in love with, but like will never
totally
say anything about it, or like you can't tell if what you're feeling is like friendship or like more than friendship, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel very seen, and it's like mm-hmm. you have friend chemistry and you don't know if it's more than friend chemistry. It's a whole situation. So I feel like maybe the movie was a little galaxy brain and putting that to the forefront. Bobby, what were you gonna say?
Well, I think that it's like, I remember one controversial thing about this movie from last year, and again, like last year's sort of like a complete haze at this point, but like it was the discourse around Aubrey Plaza. Kristen Stewart should have been with Aubrey Plaza. You should have dumped Mackenzie Davis.
Yep.
And like, while I understand that sentiment, I think that the movie, I think Clea Duvall's like, first of all, smarter than that and more mature than that and a little more like, a little more romantic than that too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I think that there's a maturity in both of the things. I think I would be in that camp if Kristen Stewart hadn't done a mature thing, which was the character in the movie to be like, fuck you, I'm done. Like the scene when she goes, I'm done, I'm leaving, this relationship is over. I think that was entirely fair. I think she should have said, I'm done with you. You're a liar. Not only are you a liar, you keep lying. And you yeah. keep telling me that you're going to do something that you're not going to do. And I don't want to deal with it anymore. And I think she was absolutely right to say fuck off in that moment. But I also think that the like really lovely part of it is that Mackenzie Davis finally uses that moment to be like, okay, this is make it or break it. Like, I do love this person, so I do have to like finally take the hard step. The whole movie, it's like none of these steps are all that dramatic, but they're just hard for her, so she doesn't want to do it. She just wants to do something that's easier. And so she finally does the hard thing about like telling her parents, taking a risk, going to find her, blah, 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 and being vulnerable for the first time, you know, like, and then when Kristen Stewart takes her back, it feels like this like grand gesture.
Yeah.
I think like if the movie had just been like Kristen Stewart saying, oh, I'm sorry this happened to you, like, now I understand, we'll be together forever, I think that that would have like made me agree with the Aubrey Plaza part more. Mm. Mm-hmm. But like the fact that it does, you do see growth on Mackenzie Davis's part, who does suck for so much of the movie. She sucks.
Yeah, she does.
But like, but she actually grows throughout it. And I think if we didn't see that growth, then this movie would have a problem. But it seems like that was overlooked by a lot of the people who were just so ready to dump on this movie, just because Aubrey Plaza and Kristen Stewart has chemistry. Guess what? Kristen Stewart has chemistry with plenty of people. Like,
yes.
Kristen Stewart has chemistry with people. That is one of her, like, skills, you know?
Yes. And for the record, so does, like, Aubrey Plaza. Like, I feel like both of those actresses have, like, a very specific
vibe
in a lot of their movies, especially when they're sort of allowed to be kind of, like, this sort of, like, authentic flirty business, you know? Like, I feel like... of course, if you put them in a room and like have them make eyes at each other, it's going to feel like there are sparks flying because they're both very...
There are sparks flying.
Yeah. They have that like specific flirty energy.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, that's great. Yeah, no,
totally. I absolutely agree. And it's like, I think like both characters go through like a nice amount of growth and like they both have to go on these journeys. And as you were saying, like it's also a real human thing to have messy relationships and like not every relationship's going to be perfect. Like you have to fight for your relationships and like maybe this relationship doesn't last or whatever, but like it's like a challenge that they had to go through. And if like that like happens and it just felt real, at least like it's like such an experience that so many people have had to go through. And like, it is an authentic thing. Like it is fucking scary coming out. And like, that's like a totally valid fear for Mackenzie Davis to have. And like, wow, like we've seen a lot of like coming out narratives, just because it's like we've seen it a lot doesn't make it like less potent or anything than like what's happening on screen.
Yeah. I've never been part of the camp that's like, what's real representation is when we don't have to have people come out. It's like coming out is a very, very significant part of basically every queer person's life. Like there's nothing wrong with including it. It's all about the framework in which you do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you get the nice big old Dan Levy monologue, which was genuinely very tender. And like, it's I really liked it. Yeah.
And I loved, and now I'm thinking about it now. I love when the gay best friend is surrounded by two other gay people. Like it was actually like a weird subtle twist that he's the gay best friend with all the wisdom, but he's in a gay friend group. Like all of his friend group is queer. So I thought that was like a little tiny little twist on the formula, which is kind of what the whole movie is. Cause this is really just a Christmas movie. It's like, oh, we have to get together for the holidays. We don't want to go. Someone's keeping a secret. There's a weird misunderstanding. There's a big fight at the end. Then everyone cries at the end and then everyone's happy at the end. Like it follows the exact same beats that so many Christmas movies do, but like with tiny little adjustments to like fit, you know, Clea's ideas, Clea's intentions.
Yeah. And I think people got all bent out of shape because it's like, oh my God, like coming out is this huge seismic thing. Like you have to handle it with caution. Whereas like in a straight Christmas movie, it would be like, oh, we're hiding the fact that I sunk all my savings into this campaign.
Or you could just sell your house and you're fine.
Right. I'm hiding the fact that I never wanted to move back to this town or like I always wanted to move back here and I hate the city, blah, blah, blah. Like I think that it was just more of sort of like a sensitive topic for people to jump on because it is a topic with more weight. But like you said, it's able to use like tropes that we've seen a million times to its advantage. And like, really, I love that like they didn't try to do something too different with the Dan Levy character because he's so wonderful in this movie.
He's good.
And you don't want him to have to hold back because the movie's concerned about like, oh, but if we have like sort of a quote unquote stereotypically gay best friend, like how does that look? What are we doing? Like you want to see him just go for it.
Totally. I mean, so many of the things that we cover are like pulling either like for subtext or like things like that. Or if it's a gay best friend, it's like, well, okay, here's the gay best friend. But it's, as you were saying, it's so refreshing just to have like gay friends and just like that be the dynamic. Like so often you'll have like one queer character or like two, but like, you know what I mean? But it's like the whole like majority of like the group is gay. And then also like, excluding that, like taking a step back, looking at like the cast, having like queer actors also behind the scenes and behind the camera also is like very cool. Like to be able to like pepper that throughout gives it like an authentic like feeling. And also like from the soundtrack, like everything is just like giving, it's giving gay.
It's giving gay.
And it just makes it so much more authentic and like wholesome, I think.
As basically any queer person can attest, you and all your friends are queer. It's not just you.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you gravitate towards other people. And that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that they end up, you know, after when she is, when Kristen Stewart is, you know, in this suburb and like miserable and in hiding and pretending to be straight, which is so, it's so funny that Kristen Stewart has to pretend to be straight. Like, it's so hilarious because she isn't doing anything. And like, it's like the Dan Levy scene where he's like, have they ever met a lesbian or something like that? Like, it really is so funny that Kristen Stewart is pretending to be a straight person and everyone believes her. But the one scene where she's finally like allowed to be herself for the first time in like an hour or days in the narrative of those of the movie is when they go to like the drag show and it's like that's a little moment that I don't know that necessarily even the straight audiences are picking up on, where it's like it's a big deal that they went to this like gay bar. This is probably a huge release for her. She probably has felt like pent up and weird for 72 hours. And being in a gay bar can just like make a world of difference, you know, like
totally.
And there are those things that queer audiences are definitely picking up on over, I don't know, like, I don't know that my parents would have been as, you know, moved by that scene as me, you know,
yeah.
they would have said, oh, drag queens, you know,
fun.
Yep. They're like, oh, they're singing.
This
a
town
song.
Has a drag
like,
bar.
Enjoyable with the song. Right. Versus like, oh, she's finding her community here. And then the stark cut from the drag bar to her going to like a straight sports bar.
The sports
is
bar.
So
it's
funny.
So funny. It's
because
so
you're like,
funny.
Oh, you do not fit in here. You don't like it here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Kristen Stewart is so good at so many things, but at playing that sort of like very bottled, like anxious
character. Like hello. I mean, I'm trapped in a house. I have to get out from this rich family.
I mean, hey, now we can, if she wins an Oscar, we can pretend that it shared with
her. Are we calling
season.
Our shot now?
I mean,
do you want to call your shot?
Yeah, sure. I'll call my shot. I think Kristen Stewart is going to win the Oscar.
Wow. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a crazy
shot
to call.
I kind of think so, too.
Yeah.
No, I would love to see it.
I kind of think so, too. I think there's, like, enough competition right now suddenly, but, like, I kind of think it's just going to go to her. Like, why not?
Yeah. Like, I think
it's a fun choice.
The House of Gucci reaction is mixed enough that it's not going to be Lady Gaga. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that, especially since Frances McDormand, like, literally won last year, like,
she's
it's going to be very difficult for her to break through. I mean, love Penelope Cruz, but don't necessarily see that happening.
I'm all
I don't know
aboard
who
the,
I'm missing,
the K-Stew
but,
train.
Like, and she has the best narrative, and,
she
like,
does.
It's all this, like, awardsy stuff that people talk about. Like, she has it all, I think. We won't get cocky, but I think there's a very good chance.
I love it.
But she's always been so good at playing like anxious, like awkward people who have to pretend that they're in a situation that is fine, even in all the way back to Twilight. So like, I love that like the character is able to take advantage of that. And I don't know if this role was written specifically for Kristen Stewart. I tried to find out, but I couldn't. But like, she's a perfect choice because I think a very essential part of it is that like with the look and how she's acting in this film, you would
her like eyes cast down
by her as a straight woman
never
suburban Pennsylvania.
No.
Never. Yeah.
I think it's like also like plays in, even though it's like very tacked on with her, like your parents are dead. They died like on Christmas.
I think
which
that
is,
runner
like,
is really funny.
Hilarious. But it like also
so
works
funny.
For why she's so uncomfortable like during Christmas, because she just like looks like she doesn't really want to be in this movie, whether or not like she does or not. But like, she's not really in rom-coms a lot, so it's kind of like new, I feel like, territory for her.
Yeah.
So you get like the awkwardness of not like all the Kristen Stewart performances that you usually get, plus you get like the actual storyline, and so it's like it kind of is layering a lot on that I think works to her advantage in this movie.
Yeah. And I think that like Kristen Stewart has, we talk occasionally about sort of like actor narratives versus like the character narratives. I think that like this was really exciting for Kristen Stewart, who has carved out like such a great space for herself as like a very visible queer actress, to like be really openly queer on screen in something that's like not a, you know, foreign
like a
produced
play
indie
or something.
Like, it was really nice, I think, that like her foray into rom-com got to be in a way like very visibly queer.
And I think like now that I'm talking about it even more, like there's something to her very visible queerness that makes all the stuff with the family even funnier, because I think that's sort of like a through line throughout the movie. All of these people, like Alison Brie is like very clearly miserable and no one is picking up on it, and she thinks she's hiding it well, and the Mary Steenburgen and Victor Garber are so oblivious. And I think that's sort of like one of the jokes of this movie, is that like their perfect daughters that they think are perfect are so clearly miserable, and how can you not tell that Alison Brie is hiding something, and how can you not tell that, you know, Harper is hiding something, and that Kristen Stewart is hiding something.
Yeah.
And then to add like a little bit more like of a wink to it, like Victor Garber is gay in real life. Like there's actually a lot going on in this movie that is pretty subtle and funny when you give it like a little bit of thought. And watching it again, I think I enjoyed it more this second time because I picked up on all of it now, you know,
like,
and I think it must have all had to have been intentional. Like, you know,
totally. The Absolutely. Victor Garber stuff is just like such so a funny. Chef's kiss.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's truly one of our finest working actors. I love him so much. I'm sorry.
He's the greatest, but I totally agree with what you said. And I love that they don't really put too fine of a point on it until right before the like giant fight Christmas tree falling scene, when Dan Levy shows up and Mary Steenburgen's like, oh, were you the ex-boyfriend? And it's like, okay.
Yes.
At this point. But I love that that's like not until very deep in the movie. So it's letting you sit with like that intentionality and being like, I get this. I think this is funny.
I even like how like outrageous that gets when he's like feeling up the ex-boyfriend's bicep and everything. I'm like all on board for that. I'm like, yes, that character would do that. This is funny, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. And it's also just like that even the ex-boyfriend just like not being oblivious, just all of this stuff that's so obvious that everyone is very clearly choosing to ignore. And I think that's kind of something that the movie is saying. It's like, it's not that you're stupid, and it's not even that you're super oblivious. It's that you're choosing not to confront these obvious realities about your family and the people in your lives, because it's easier to ignore it.
Totally.
And like, I think that that's, you know, like actually kind of a really interesting commentary for a movie to make, especially a movie like this, you know, like a Christmas movie that should be a little lighter and sillier. But like we were saying, like the best Christmas movies are a little melancholy and sad, and like not just this like surface level, like sparkle and happiness, you know.
Totally.
The Alison Brie thing, because it's like also, I think it picked up on it more this time, but like I feel like of all the tells that you get of like people being aware, she feels, even though like there's the confrontation where she like walks in on them from early on, you sort of get the gist that she kind of already knows immediately just from like asking the questions at the dinner. And she's like, oh, like, wasn't that this room? Because I feel like she's harboring so much herself, where she's trying to bottle things and has been like lying so much to her family, that she's like kind of able to recognize it. And if you're a sibling of someone, you're going to pick up on things and you're going to recognize things about your sibling. So I felt like watching her performance that she was a little more like knowing about what's going on with Harper, which I thought was interesting, because I thought the first time watching it, I was like, oh, this is just like a horse girl. I really don't care about her performance or her. She gives big horse girl energy. I'm sorry.
More horse girl energy than Mary Holland, though?
I would say yes.
It's really like evolved horse girl versus
like an
like
anamorph horse
raw
girl.
Horse girl, you know what I mean?
Well, Alison Brie starred in a movie called Horse Girl.
She did.
So
don't can't say that I like that movie. I do but love Alison Brie though. My favorite. And I think that nobody is better at playing like extremely stuck up, like extremely neurotic.
Yes.
Like than Alison Brie. Like she's done it so many times, but I feel like she always is good about like tweaking that type of character to fit like the story that she's in. And I love when she does it. I don't love when she like does different stuff. Not that I don't think she has range, but like Horse Girl is a great example where I was like, this character does not really seem like it's working.
No.
But she's great. And I think they all look very related, which is an underrated thing in movies that
siblings
very frequently
that actually look related. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. I love it.
And there must be something to the Mary Holland thing too, where like, again, like maybe at this point we're like hyper-analyzing things, but that's what podcasts are for. But like,
absolutely.
Of course.
Mary Holland is the only one who is like unabashedly herself and is ridiculed for it. Like that's kind of an interesting twist on like the kooky sibling. 'Cause there's always a kooky sibling, but I don't think the kooky sibling is ever more than like just a trope. Like it's never actually like thematically like kind of crucial to the story too, and like it never actually provides like any sort of like commentary and everything else, but the Mary Holland stuff does, and she's like a particularly kooky sibling too, and it's a little bit up, but like I love the thing where she's like, I spent over 100 hours on that painting, and I love that she is a successful novelist at the end of it, like it's really funny.
Do we think the book is good?
Yes, I think it's a masterpiece.
Yes. Yes, I think it's actually good.
Yeah,
I think it's actually good.
It's so satisfying that she is the one that finds sort of like commercial success at the end. Like, it's so satisfying when and I love
the cardboard cutout of her is so good.
Mm-hmm. And the tiny little like seed points that like Dan Levy helped in and basically like became her manager
because he's the only one who gets the book.
Yeah.
When she's telling it to everyone else is like sure, like this weird mystical world. And he's like, oh, totally, I follow you. Yeah. Like the elves defeat like the wizards or whatever.
It's great. I think it
takes a long time to build a world. Oh, yep. What was that line? It's so funny.
So good.
She wrote this movie with Clea DuVall, so it makes sense because like every line that she delivers is like so spot on, and you're like, yeah, girl, yeah, I know you wrote this for yourself. Yeah. You know what you can do.
Yeah.
But it's funny and light, and I think that like what we were talking about with how, you know, the best Christmas movies have this mix of like happiness and melancholia. Mm. I think that like what we touched on it briefly, but what was exciting about this movie was like the queer visibility behind the scenes and how it did feel like we're not just like making this because we want brownie points. Like Clea DuVall obviously being like the creative force is a huge thing, and then we mentioned Victor Garber, but I even think of like Aubrey Plaza, who's like openly bisexual, but as far as I know, I was looking through her filmography, has never like played someone on screen who's like explicitly queer aside from maybe Ingrid Goes West, but like, so this is a great opportunity I'm sure I'm wrong and there's something that I can't think of, but I've known for so long like, oh my god, Aubrey Plaza, a bisexual icon, but like she for the most part is not like linked to people of the same gender on screen. Right. So this was like, it was also great where it was like, you made an effort to like make the ex-girlfriend also someone who like would actually be her ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
I mean, jury's still out on Mackenzie Davis, but it doesn't matter for the record, but we can hope.
Well,
she's 5'10".
Debicki, Mackenzie Davis, like lesbian movie. Like that's what I want, where it's just like two tall people like walking down the street,
so
stomping
tall
on everybody. And that's great.
The thing is that, so Mackenzie Davis is only 5'10", so she would still look kind of short.
So is Kristen Stewart like 5'3"?
5'4".
Okay.
Maybe. Ooh. I don't know.
How tall
we'll
is Elizabeth Debicki?
6'3".
Huge.
She's 6'3"? Oh my god.
I hate that.
Good
I know
for
that
her.
Off the top
I
of
know
my head. I always think of there's this Viola Davis clip from Widows where she's like, Elizabeth Debicki is 6'3".
I've never seen that.
It's a great clip.
I love Widows, by the way.
Good movie.
So good.
Widows. Oh.
So good.
She was so good. Oh, everyone across the board is good in that, but she is just so in the pocket.
What went wrong with that movie?
Marketing.
We can't like get into it too deep, but like
marketing.
I wish that movie made $800 million worldwide.
Yeah, instead of 12.
Yeah. Oh, so sad.
What were you saying before? Sorry. Aubrey Plaza casting. Yes.
Aubrey Plaza casting. Well, I mean, you talking about Mackenzie Davis and Elizabeth Debicki, I think I mentioned this in another episode, but reminded me that there's like,
you
can basically
going
track this chain of like actresses who have like been queer on screen with other actresses, but it's like it's a small enough like circle that there's like 12 of them who've all like been involved with each other on screen. It's crazy. It's like Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis and Gugu Mbatha-Raw and Gemma Arterton and Elizabeth Debicki. Like,
oh,
it just
god
like keeps
going,
it's
like a queer friendship in college or whatever.
Yeah, it's the modern sewing circle.
Yeah.
It's the holiday season.
The Supriyaki season.
Da-na-na-na-na.
A whoop-de-doo and a t-shirt and socks. And don't forget to hang up your pins.
Totally.
Because just directly at 12 o'clock, Supriyaki will be coming down the chimney.
Yes.
Coming down the chimney.
Now.
Coming down the chimney. Wow.
Yeah.
We're so good. Oh, my god.
We're so good
I'm
at
like the new Weird Al.
Listen.
I'm listening.
Listen. Maybe you're listening to this episode and you're in need of some last minute Christmas or holiday shopping.
Good idea.
Maybe you're listening to this episode and you're like, it's been a long year for me. I deserve a treat.
I will say that I literally did that this week.
Good for you. I support it.
Thank you.
Maybe you're just looking for some independent business to support
maybe
during this time of giving.
Maybe you're up in the North Pole and you need something to keep you warm as you deliver gifts to all the children across the world.
There's a lot of good reasons to buy from Super Yaki, and they're all coalescing during this holiday season.
Perfect.
We could not have better things to say about this independent merch shop, our favorite little corner of the internet. Mm-hmm. They just had a very successful in-person event. Okay.
Yes, they did.
They're rocking and rolling. They're thriving.
They're rocking around the Christmas tree.
And we really think that you should give them a little hand and enjoy some incredibly high quality movie merch, whether it's shirts or sweatshirts or socks or home goods like pins and notebooks and cards.
They have it all.
They have whatever you want. And you can also buy really cool cinema inspired books on their site. They are doing a great job lifting up independent artists. It's
the
really
best.
Like a win-win-win-win-win situation
like, you
for you this holiday.
The Christmas season or the holiday season is so much about like wholesome, you know, like family energy.
Yeah.
And that's all that exudes from Super Yaki.
I do consider them
they're the best.
My family legally.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not afraid to say it.
So are you Brooke Yaki now?
Yeah. That's my middle name. Yeah, totally.
Brooke Super Yaki
Solomon.
And
listen.
Works.
Kind of works. Listen. We have a special gift for you.
Oh my God.
The listeners.
Whoa.
10% off
all
of your Super Yaki needs with code SUPERQQ. That is all caps, no spaces.
Talk about a gift.
Whether you're looking to give to someone else, give to yourself, or give to the collective good-natured energy in the universe, Super Yaki is the place for you. You can find them at superyaki.com. That's SUPERYAKI.com. Have a very happy holiday. And guess what, Jordan?
What?
Let's watch more movies.
Hey! Ho, ho, ho. I feel like what's also so relatable about this is we were talking about Mary Holland and like her writer and like no one in the family getting it. Is I feel like, I don't know about you, but like for queer people, I feel like there's so much to latch on to like for sort of everyone. Like I felt like a lot of like the Mary Holland with like your family like judging you for your art. Or like going home and like being closeted, like going out like to see your friends and like not having told your friends that you're out yet. Or then like when you're out and returning home, feeling like a little bit out of place and like not sure how to like fit in at a party.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like
the throwaway
so many life experiences built within this.
Yeah. The throwaway line that I think Mary Steenburgen has about Aubrey Plaza, where she's like, oh, that lifestyle choice is like a great, first of all, hilarious. But like a great example of like when you are out, people are going to talk in a small town. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. And I feel like it's a really good slice of America where it's like, it's kind of deep enough in the middle of nowhere, but it's also affluent where people are like extremely concerned with appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, like this summer I was in rural Pennsylvania for a family reunion, and it's like, I think that people maybe misunderstand like how sort of like volatile it can be, even if like your family is the nicest people in the world. Like nobody in my extended family knows I'm queer. They probably never will.
Yeah,
it's a whole thing where like I think that like Mackenzie Davis going home and like femming herself up, basically like suddenly wearing all these like sort of preppy dresses and like playing this sort of like professional poised woman, I was like, this is like very deeply relatable because obviously this is different because she's coming home with a serious girlfriend, but it's like sometimes you just want to like not cause waves
drama,
and be like,
of course,
we're just gonna, it's fine, we can just ignore it for like 5 days or whatever,
right?
And then it'll be over and we can go back to living like our hot coastal elite lives. I'm just saying, I think that this is a more relatable movie than people maybe think it is.
Totally.
No, absolutely. Do you think that like these, not like necessarily like Christmas related, but I feel like it was a lot of people have like liked this movie or are like sort of thirsting for movies like this again, like a nice rom-com but like with the spin or things like that. Like I feel like they're starting to crop up more and it feels
nice. Bring back the rom-com. Bring back the big budget Hollywood rom-com.
The mid-budget.
I mean
that J-Lo Owen Wilson one that looks
oh my god
in on one hand, like the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. And on the other hand, like everything I've needed for the past like 18 years where I was tearing up at the trailer. I was like, what's wrong with me? And I realized like, it's because we haven't had anything like this in so long. And like,
no,
this looks perfect. This looks perfect. It looks so dumb and like a big budget, cheesy rom-com where they give the whole movie away in the trailer. I was just like,
it's so long.
This is correct. It's like a 3.5 minute long trailer, isn't it?
Yes,
it's like
it's
fully
crazy.
Nearly 4 minutes long.
It's so
insane. Because they that's not the trailer I think they'll put in a movie theater too. It's like the online trailer where it's even longer.
Well, and that was, I saw, speaking of like online discourse, like when that trailer came out, I saw people being like, what is this? Like, this looks terrible. And I was like, this is exactly what the internet has been asking for like 7-8 years. Like, bring back the rom-com. It's like, they brought it back. This is exactly what you wanted.
Yes.
And I'm there. And I'm there. And I think that's sort of the same thing with Happiest Season too. It's like, you wanted a queer Christmas movie. It's like, you got like kind of the perfect example of one, you know?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that it was so, when eyes are on something that's sort of like seismic, even if it's seismic in like a very small way, it immediately comes under much harsher criticism. And we talk about this with like queer movies in general, is that like and diverse movies, like you get slapped on the wrist for stuff that like a quote-unquote prototypical straight movie would like never get, you know, shamed for. And I think like because all eyes were on Happiest Season, it got like extra scrutinized, which is unfortunate because it's like we've said, it really like knows what it's about and like doesn't shy away from that.
I think it's like the perks and harms of streaming movies, where sometimes like a streaming movie will come out and it will like fade so quickly into the abyss. But other times, especially like during the pandemic, like people were so thirsty for new things. So when you got a new movie that looked like it was actually a movie, people are like, oh my god, I've been craving this. And you're automatically, because you're home, you're so much, it's so easy to sort of like pick at things when it's just a streamer, versus it's like you're going to the theater and you're having an experience.
Y'all remember Christmas Day 2020 when Wonder Woman 1984 dropped on HBO Max? An insane an insane day on the internet. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, and I think Christmas movies also, like, it's hard to, even a year removed from the release date, I think it's hard to judge, like, the impact of a Christmas movie until, like, five Christmases have passed. Like, I think that you, a Christmas movie doesn't actually become, like, a popular Christmas movie until it becomes, like, a tradition.
Yes.
And, like, people need those years to, like, decide whether or not they are going to keep it in their, you know, their, what am I trying to say? Their Christmas rotation. Yeah. And like my Christmas rotation has evolved over the years. And now I think it's finally like settled into something. But like I'm always willing to open up like a space in the circle for a new movie. And like I said, TBD, I think this is going to be a new edition, but I think I won't know until like 2025.
Yeah. Right. Because like, you'll just get the craving around the holidays to watch whatever your usual favorites are. And like it really has to be a movie that you're comfortable with watching like once a year, which is
hard.
More
really hard to do.
Like it's more than it sounds like.
Yeah.
Especially around the same time.
Right.
Because you're reminded of like, oh, last year when I watched it, we were doing this, and the year before we were doing that. And I think that like this has enough sort of like richness, and like it just really sucks you in, even though I think like half the time you are sort of like cringing, like, oh my god, like it's so awkward, but in a way that makes me want more, that it can sustain that like year after year. Like there's plenty of great like Hallmark and streaming and sort of like Hallmark and streaming adjacent Christmas movies that pop up for a year, but I don't know if they like really
like
hit
the lasting power
the more than once watch.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to do. And I feel like so it's like studios can't force a Christmas movie upon us. Like it has to, as Bobby was saying, it has to happen organically. Like even though Home Alone was like one of the biggest movies of all time, it's still like built up the time and like has the like, you know, it had to garner like the distance to become something. Like it has to gain momentum. It can't just be like, here's the thing, love the thing. It's like with stars, like you can't force someone to be a star. It has to like happen organically. Like the people have to kind of latch onto it.
You have to be able to, like, I mean, Home Alone, it's great. You watch it, like, 20 years out, and you're like, this movie is still was really, like, sticking with me. Like,
right.
it's
so
very
gay.
It just has to be a very well-made movie, yeah. Like plain and simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this movie has lots of like little cozy touches too. Like Jordan, I will admit I saw in your notes, but like the opening credits and
and
the closing credits too,
so good.
Where it's Mary Steenburgen's Instagram. They make me so happy.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's probably what her Instagram, does she have an Instagram?
Yeah. It's a very,
is it good?
Does she?
I don't know. I don't know either. I'm not sure.
I feel like that's what her Instagram
she
would
should.
Be. Like her and Ted Danson just like being the richest probably couple in the world thriving, you know?
Listen, a couple that I love. One of the few remaining celebrity couples.
They're so good.
Cozy couple.
Yes.
Cozy. That couple is cozy. Mm-hmm. And another thing, like I think I was thinking about this. You were saying something earlier that made me think about this, but something I've been noticing more and more recently is when a movie doesn't have, when a contemporary movie doesn't have like too many punch-up jokes about like extremely topical things.
Yes.
And I notice it when a movie doesn't, and they're rare. And this movie really doesn't have many overly topical jokes. I think the only kind of topical running joke they have is Mary Steenburgen's Instagram being like, oh, I gotta make content. Like, other than that, there are no real jokes that refer to the time. And I think that takes a lot of restraint in a comedy nowadays. Like, you always have to put in like some stupid joke about TikTok or some stupid joke about like creators or something, or like millennial pink, you know, like all of these jokes that age poorly in 30 seconds, let alone like 5 years. So like this movie not having those is like pretty impressive.
It is.
And I think like the sort of the modern touches that they do have, like I think about like The Runner with Dan Levy being like, I can track you, like I know how to track people. Mm-hmm. The CIA can do it. Or like Kristen Stewart being like, I can't call an Uber, a rideshare out of here because it's going to be like $1,000 or whatever, is like they're done in a way that don't feel too contemporary. Like it feels like, oh, this is a movie set in modern time, but they don't need to remind you like of the specific moment, which just like adds to the sort of, and it's that great small town energy. I love like the independent wine shop and like we said, the drag bar and the sports
movie theater.
Bar,
the movie theater with like the wood chairs too. Like that's like a lovely flourish that it's like small enough that it doesn't even have like the refurbishment that it's like comfy chairs. Like I loved that.
Yeah, it's nice. And like I think that scene where she's in the mall where she just seems so uncomfortable is a great scene because it is sort of like more glossy, like contemporary, like feels like, okay, this is like a moment. And she's so uncomfortable and like we're uncomfortable too. And it feels cozier when you get back to the house and like little small town accoutrement.
Totally.
It makes me happy. It's a movie that makes me happy. I don't know what to say.
You're standing on your Apple box yelling.
Yeah, I love it. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside. And I think like it's also really funny. Like we could go into all the different jokes,
like,
but there's
like quick plot summary skim. I don't even know if we need it.
I mean, look, Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis go back to Mackenzie Davis's parents for Christmas, only for Mackenzie Davis to reveal on the car ride over, oh, shit, sorry, even though we're very serious, I'm actually not out to my parents. Mm-hmm. And not only do I want to pretend to be straight for the whole weekend, it would be great if you could also pretend to be straight. Chaos ensues. But everything ends happily. And I like that you don't, one, that you don't see the proposal because Abby, Kristen Stewart, picks out a ring at the beginning, which is a very cute scene that made me very happy. Also, all just classic gay relationship. They've been dating for like a year. And she's like, it's time. We're going to get engaged. We already moved in together. It's happening. Gotta love it. But like, I like that you don't see her propose. And also that like their big reconciliation scene at the end is private.
Yes.
Plus Dan.
Yeah.
Movie.
Yeah.
Like it's not in front of the whole family. It's not the sort of like, I'm ready to like actively like come out and like have this big reconciliation with you. I mean, even Mackenzie Davis, like coming out to her family, Kristen Stewart isn't even there. And I kind of like that because it feels more authentic and it doesn't feel like posturing and it doesn't feel like, guys, now we have to have the scene where gay people and straight people come together.
Right, right.
About how we're all one family. They say that for the end credits, which is where you want it.
Right. And like Victor Garber storming off after everyone like kind of comes forward with things is like great. Like he wouldn't immediately be like, oh, my little women, come hug me. Like, that's right. not organic. Like, he would be like, I'm overwhelmed. I got to get the fuck out of here and, like, go to my, like, little yeah. office and, like, think. Like, that makes mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's good.
They also don't really have them be like, okay, well, we don't support that lifestyle. Even though they sort of, like, it takes them a minute to come around to it. It doesn't mm-hmm. have this sort of like vitriol that I feel like a lot of coming out stories have. Like a movie that I love so much, the half of it has
how
like
much of it? Sorry, I mean, I'm sorry.
I love all of it, yes, let me just yes. say. But like that there's a coming out scene in that movie where one of the characters is like, you're going to hell for being gay. And it feels like, mm-hmm. even though, again, like I said, I really like that movie. But like, it feels like slightly out of place in a contemporary film. And I yeah. like that this isn't like, oh my God, how could you, our daughter, be gay?
Right.
It's more of a focus yeah. on like, I can't believe our children felt like they couldn't tell us these like very intense things that are going on in their lives.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah. Like the letting yeah. down as a parent.
Yeah. And I think the movie, it skipping to the 1 year later, like, I think queer audiences would assume that that year was not easy, you know, like, and that's sort of what Clea DuVall is saying at the end of it is that like it could have been a rough year, but look, they're fine a year later and like mm-hmm. they're at least fine enough to like spend Christmas together again. And I think right. that was kind of a powerful decision just to show that like the 1 year later wasn't just 1 year later. It was like, they're okay, because I think mm-hmm. she knows that people might say like, how is this going to affect these people, because this could right. be rough, and now we know that like it's gonna be okay, like yeah. they're yeah. all watching It's a Wonderful Life together, you know, it's right fine.
And like it's Dan fine. Levy's there for some reason. I love that yeah, he's for some reason joined the
he's
family.
Got a book to manage, okay,
he
yeah.
is
maybe
he has to watch The Fish. What is he doing?
The Fish, the whole
doesn't he get a him by him killing that fish. Oh
him
my god.
Him killing the fish.
Yeah.
Top tier
so
comedy.
Good. It's good.
Great
it's funny.
Way to make a phone call more interesting and basically always boring bit yeah. of movies that you have to do.
Right.
But give the him runner of him do. Killing the fish is so fucking funny.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Schitt's Creek person, but like this was like something that did sell me on him as like
he's
like
great.
A star?
Yeah.
You know?
I think he is like popping yeah. so much in this movie. Yeah. I think that he is just like charming and delightful and very funny. Like I like him. I have no qualms yeah. with him in this movie. And he's very good at, I feel like, because I feel like Schitt's Creek has a lot of that too. He's very good at like adding interiority to a very like mm-hmm. external kind of like big character. Like, you know, we talked about the monologue that he gives Christian Stewart where he's like, right. not every coming out like is easy, and like mm-hmm. this is really sensitive for a lot of people, and that doesn't mean that like, yeah, Harper doesn't love you. Like he totally mm-hmm. sells it. Yeah. Are you a Schitt's Creek yeah. fan, Bobby?
I am. I'm a big Schitt's Creek fan. I was really I'm really glad it ended when it ended, because I think it had run its course. But also, like, I think that he's very much just doing a David impersonation throughout, like, 90% of this, which I'm totally here for. And I think that that's great. And I think he's very funny yeah. at that particular type of character, which is also the same exact, like cadence and, like, tone that he uses in all of his, like, Spawn that he does, all of his commercials. He just does yep. that, which I assume is very close to what he's like personally. I'm just assuming.
Probably.
But, like, yes. But that speech at the end, it's like him like slowing down and like you said like internalizing things and just like being wise was really powerful and made me really like really go all in like in liking this character, because it kind of feels like a retread of David in many ways, but then when he actually imparts a little wisdom at the end of this and is sort of the voice of reason, it was good. It was also showing that like I think usually the best friend character gets a moment like that, but I'm not sure it's always that good and
yes.
Important and like crucial to the narrative too. Like she needed to right. hear that from someone. She needed to hear that from a gay person too. Like mm-hmm. again, that's the gay best friend thing. Like in this instance, like it needed to be a gay best friend. It couldn't be a straight best friend, honestly.
Right. Like if they had not. Subverted that, it would have been like mm-hmm. whoa.
Yeah.
Well, stop.
I don't need your advice like Craig. Right. Like sorry, yeah. I don't. Yeah.
You have no idea what's going on here.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Completely. And like a great example of how like this is a Christmas movie about something, capital A, mm-hmm. capital S, about something, but like it's able to use that to its advantage, and that you get a little like extra tug at the heartstring when you're like, this is something that's actually like very important to a huge amount of people, and not you have to go get him because you guys are meant to be together because we say so in this movie. Although sometimes that's great. I'm not here to shit on rom-coms. I love them very dearly.
There's nothing better than someone chasing after someone though at the end of a movie. I mean, gets you going.
Yeah, that's she great. Knows how to track her location.
Yeah.
Thanks to Dan Levy. Yeah.
Bobby, you know, coming from Who Weekly, I feel like we have to ask, who are the who's or them's of like the movie? Like, did you feel like there were people who were popping who are like, well, yeah, just throwing that in your corner?
I think the only them's in this movie are Kristen Stewart and maybe Mary Steenburgen. But I think there is an argument to be made. Well, I guess maybe Dan Levy at this point. Dan Levy and Kristen Stewart are the only them's in this movie. Yeah. But that's fine.
I would
that's
agree.
Totally fine for a Christmas movie. Because Christmas movies are all about the ensemble anyway. Like everyone's exactly. sort of at equal weight. You don't want anyone overpowering anyone, and if so, like they have to be able to work well with others. And fortunately, Kristen Stewart does work well with others. You know, like they can't suck all the oxygen out of the room, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah. I also think that speaks a lot to like the fact that we're calling this like a star-studded Christmas movie. Right. And it's just Kristen Stewart.
Yeah.
Because I guess I'm thinking about another recent one, like The Family Stone, a recent Christmas movie that had, you know, like Diane Keaton was the big name. And it was a stacked cast. But I think that you needed bigger names in that, it was kind of crucial to the story because you needed these larger than life figures fighting. That movie there was so much tension in that movie. There was more tension in that movie than in Happiest Season. Like you needed someone larger than life, like Diane Keaton fighting with someone larger than life, like, Sarah Jessica Parker. Like that's sort of what and even Rachel McAdams at that point was like kind of on the come up. Like you needed
that.
There's a lot.
There's so many people in that movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Typically like a Christmas movie is totally fine if it just has like a lot of like a big name and then like smaller ones around it, I think.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And it's like
maybe I'm just like completely pulling out of my ass, but I don't know.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, the Hallmark Channel and I would say Netflix to an extent like has built an entire Christmas movie empire off of like totally anonymous people or people that you like completely forgot about. Like I think of like
Vanessa Hudgens. She's carrying the Netflix like Christmas movies on her back.
I mean, A Christmas Prince like stars that girl from iZombie. Who's so much of a who that I like can't even remember. Rose McIver. Ah. Oh my God.
Wow.
Rose McIver.
Yeah, but like she's leading that, and like that's a whole franchise now.
That's wild.
And even if we want to stick with the High School Musical scenario, we have like the Corbin Bleu, Monique Coleman like dance Christmas movie
that came out
this year. Yeah, they reunited for like a dance based Christmas movie this year. I think it's on Lifetime or something
my God.
Like that.
Okay,
yeah, it exists. I'll try to find it for you. It's out there.
Walter, I won't watch
but, like,
it.
They've been doing a ton of press for that movie, also. A ton of press.
Where have I been?
Yeah, I don't know. Where have you been?
Oh,
I've seen it
God.
All over Twitter. I guess the algorithm just doesn't know that you like High School Musical enough.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Wow. I mean, they should know.
I was trying to think of a Netflix movie. I haven't watched a lot of the Netflix Christmas movies, but I watched a good one a couple of years ago, and I was trying to remember. Let It Snow. Did you watch Let It Snow? I thought that was really cute. Vaguely queer. That's a
Bobby,
cute one.
Yes, there's a queer couple in there.
Not only have you seen it, we covered it on this very podcast.
We covered it. Oh my God. It's
we
so
let
cute.
It snow.
It's a really
it's
cute
so
movie.
Cute. Yes. Yeah. I love it. And like that, such a great cast of like talented young actors.
Up and comers.
But like everyone that's in that movie, you're like, yeah, wait, they're like, they actually are like have a real career.
Okay. Now I have the question that always comes up.
Yeah.
Is the girl, which girl is that? The blondie?
Kiernan Shipka.
Okay, it's Shipka.
Kiernan Shipka.
I'm always confusing her and the other one who gets cast as the younger version of everyone.
McKenna Grace.
Well, the two of them, the names
McKenna
are too interchangeable.
Played young Kiernan Shipka
right.
in Chilling
there
Adventures
it is.
Of Sabrina.
I feel like you've told me this 100 times and I always forget.
Yeah. Yeah, but Kieran Shipka is like a teen. McKenna Grace
is like a child.
She's 14, 15 now. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Her and all the kids from the Babysitter's Club all hang out together, and it makes me so happy.
Oh, my goodness. Cute.
Great Netflix show. Highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. Jordan, which I know you fucking haven't. It's really good, okay? It's great. But yes, Let It Snow is adorable. And I think that, like,
it's so cute.
Every YA Christmas movie should be that wholesome and be about, like, teens who are not angsty.
Like, mean to each other?
Yeah.
Well, there's some angst in there. But,
like, good angst.
It's not, like, the angst where you're, like, it's, like, grating. It's just sort of, like, normal classic bullying. I feel like it's so obvious when there's just, like, such heightened bullying and it's just sort of, like, exhausting versus something where you're just, like, this is, like, yeah, teens are mean.
Teens being
but
teens.
They're not, like, sociopaths.
Eventually, we'll be scraping the bottom of the barrel with queer Christmas movies, but we haven't.
Because there are, like, none.
We haven't gotten there yet. I think The Family Stone is, like, actually on our list.
Yeah.
So maybe tune in next year for that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I've never seen it. So
watch it for the first time.
You've never seen it? Oh, my God.
I know. I know.
Oh, my God.
I'm famously terrible at watching movies.
She's never seen a movie. Yeah.
And my family, although they like the holidays, are not really much for, I feel like, modern holiday is the best way to put it. Like, we watch White Christmas and It's a Wonderful Life and nothing that was made after, like, 1980.
After the Hays Code was lifted.
Around the holidays. Like, I think that if I suggested that we should watch Elf, my parents would be like, you have to get on the plane back to Los
Angeles.
That's
so funny. Yeah. That's like a classic for my dad and fam love Elf.
They love Elf.
They love Elf. Big on Elf.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm trying to
not a,
like,
huge Elf person.
I am also not a huge Elf person. I actually kind of can't stand that movie.
The thing I'm hiding that I always hate to reveal is that every Christmas Eve my parents put on Polar Express, the Robert Zemeckis movie. So you just, know, tells you about the family taste.
I just still can't believe that
it's rough.
That, like, that is the Christmas Eve movie.
Yeah, I'm trying. Like, keep coming home, like, trying to, like, ingratiate new movies. I'm like, Little Women 2019. Like, let me bring, like, something new to the table. But they're like, what if we just, like, watched, you know, a Christmas Carol, Polar Express again? And I'm like, no.
Like, oh, my God.
That's insane.
Yeah, maybe that's gonna be, like, my happiest season is, like, that's what I have to do. I have to go home and, like, confront my family about.
I mean, I think you already tried last year with this movie and then
my dad was like, so you showed this because it's gay? And I'm like, I mean, yes, but also it's a good Christmas movie.
I mean,
it's good.
Yeah, that's basically how every conversation with my family goes, where I'm like, guys, we should watch this movie, and they're like, Is this one of those ones? And usually
ones?
I'm like, it is one of the hand flick ones. what can I say? We have a type. That's why we started this podcast in the first place.
Yes.
Anyway, I think that we should all agree that there should be more queer Christmas movies. And hopefully the sort of, like, capital D discourse did not start enough of a negative trend that we'll be robbed of them in the future. I want to say no. I don't know if that's me being optimistic. Actually, Bobby, I would love your social insight. How do you feel that, like, sort of the social impact of this movie? Do you think that it, like, made any sort of dent? Is it too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell.
Yeah.
I think that, like, I think that we need a couple more Christmases and a couple more holiday seasons to pass before we can actually decide whether or not this movie was received appropriately or not, and, like, what the impact of it will be. Hopefully, I think if anything, it's pretty easy to measure that, like, it was a success and that it proved to people that, like, there can be queer Christmas movies. But I don't know that that gives me faith that future queer Christmas movies will be as good as this one.
Yeah.
But I would like to believe that it's going to be better received as the years go by than it seemed like it was last December or whenever it came out, you know, because it is just, it's just good. And that's the other great thing about, like, if, even if a, you know, a Christmas movie doesn't do super well around Christmas, every year people are looking for more of them to watch. So there's, like, there's more and more chance for discovery every season because people are looking for stuff to watch. So, like, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think we know yet.
No, I think I think that's very insightful. Yeah. And I think that, like, I mean, Single All the Way this year is a great example. And that was, like, relatively high profile.
I
feel like Netflix pushed it a lot. I also haven't seen it yet. You know what I do know? It takes place in New Hampshire, which is my home state. So, you know, I will be checking it out
Bring it up to your family. Watch it with the fam.
Yeah, I might be like, guys, it takes place in New Hampshire. I'll have to. I'm very sus about movies that take place in New Hampshire because there's a very specific energy that's not just like generic Northeast, which is why I believe nothing is set in New Hampshire because everyone knows better.
It's like New Hampshire's, you know, a part. It's a character, so like you have to know when the character's real and it's like contributing to the story.
Yeah, of course. But it's like if you're looking for picturesque New England, you want Vermont. You do not want New Hampshire. So it's a little special. Every time they decide to pick the
you're
sort of
special
like
is what
kooky,
we're saying.
The kooky sibling of
you're the Mary Holland.
Yeah, yeah, of the New England. So I'll have to check it out. I heard it's kind of bad, but I also, you know, bad is relative when it comes to holiday movies. It might mean that it's great.
Well, I feel like even that with this is like we did like sort of touch on it, but like there are like things that like we could dig into that are bad or like not negative depictions, but like where people bumped outside of the queer stuff is like the like socioeconomic sort of like under. Pinnings where
literally
it's like,
could not bother me less.
I know
Christmas
exactly,
movies are like, about nice houses,
right? Exactly. Where people were like, well, Abby's coming from like a poor like family and they don't really talk about it. And it's like, well, sure, but like doesn't really matter.
I mean, also,
and
they live in downtown Pittsburgh. Like, oh, well, she's not struggling.
I feel like she was moving into,
oh, she moved into her place,
Harper's place. Like, Harper, like that place is definitely family passed down, or like her family's definitely paying the rent.
She's a high profile reporter.
What does she do?
She's not a reporter.
She's a reporter because Anna Gasteyer recognized. She's like, I know you. I know your work or whatever. Okay,
sure. Yeah, Where did you read me or see me?
She's like a political journal, like a print journalist.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea what Abby does.
Yeah.
Never.
Dog walks.
Stated.
Pets.
Pets.
Yeah, dog
parents.
Pet
she pets.
Walker, pets
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for her, you know?
Yeah.
I'm trying to live in a large American city off
I mean,
of pet
sure.
sitting money.
Yeah, go but for it. But that's what I mean. It's like it doesn't matter
me.
Because so
yeah.
like it's a fantasy and like that's the whole point of like Christmas movies. So it's like you have to like let those contrivances go. Because if you're going into this movie looking for comments on like class or like race or things like that, I'm like, this movie is not trying to deal with that at all or discuss it. So what's the point about digging your heels into something when it's not like trying to have that conversation? Like, you can flag it or whatever, but like, why wait so much of your like argument around that?
Right. I think it feeds into the sort of like negative internet mentality too, where it's like, if it's a pile on, like people are gonna try and keep finding problems with it. And it's like, if you want to talk about socioeconomics and probably like 95% of movies, like you can find something to complain about. But I think it just got more visible because everyone was like, oh, this is a thing that like people are talking about, both positively and negatively. Like, let's see what we can dig up.
Do you have another scene, any other scenes or things you want to flag?
I mean, look, the only, I feel like my favorite one-off joke in this movie is when Alison Brie literally yanks.
That's what I was gonna bring up.
Kristen Stewart by the legs and says, "Stay out of this, Sappho."
That's what I had too.
A thing that nobody would Sappho. Ever say, and that's why I find it so funny. The OG lesbian.
It's good. Like, yeah, that must have been when I that line seems like something that like someone involved. It was Mary or Cleo was just like, I have to work this in somewhere. Like maybe someone said that to one of them once or something, and like it was so ridiculous. I have to work this in.
But
Alison Brie, what a perfect person to scream that to.
Yes.
Just like great casting all around. Maybe an underappreciated thing about this movie is how well cast it was.
Yes, totally. Yeah. And I think, like, I mean, we talked about it with Dan Levy. We talked about it with Kristen Stewart. I think that, like, Aubrey Plaza is playing, like, her sardonic, flirty, like, character type extremely well here. Like, it's not something that asks the actors to reach in a way that feels uncomfortable, but it's really good in that, like, it builds the best parts of, like, the humor and the characters around, like, the actors that were chosen.
Totally.
It's very smart, and it makes me happy.
Bobby, do you have any scenes or things before that you want to make sure you touch
anything
on?
Anything we forgot?
Nothing we forgot. I really, we already talked about Dan and the fish. I love the tracking joke. I tracked you.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bada bang.
I love to see it.
Like we said, this movie did do pretty well by streaming numbers.
It was the
numbers.
Most watched movie of all time.
It was, according to Hulu, a totally unbiased source, the best debut in Hulu's history with over like 400,000 households that watched it on opening day.
Mm-hmm. How many red notices is that?
I can't even keep track of it. I honestly don't know. It also does exist apparently on Blu-ray and DVD internationally. Oh. So if you wanted to track down physical media of this,
that
you
kind of rules.
Could find it. And they also released an original soundtrack, which, as we mentioned, is a very good
very
original
soundtrack.
Yes. Shout out to Tegan and Sarah, always delivering the goods.
I feel like that's when I knew when I was so young, like realizing now upon thing, being like, oh, I was so drawn to Tegan and Sarah when I was little. Like, I wonder why. And now you're like, oh, well, okay, cool, I get it. Yeah.
What is it? Tegan and Sarah it's Tegan and Sarah is Ali and AJ for people whose Mackenzie Davis is Kristen Stewart or something like
that.
Oh my
gosh. Incredible.
Something along those lines. And I don't know. There's no concrete info about a sequel, but between Aubrey Plaza saying that she wants to do it on her book tour and Clea DuVall and Mary Holland saying that there's like something in early stage development, we might see this again in the future. I'd be down.
Happiest season two, Lost in...
It really should just be like Mackenzie Davis and Kristen Stewart, like living a happy life, teaming up to help Aubrey Plaza, like find the girl of her dreams.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And you bring in like another very
that's
cool
a good idea.
Actress.
That's a good idea.
That would make me happy. It's like
call them up now.
It's like an adventure sort of like everyone has to work together to like pull off this like great
romance.
To
get Riley in love.
Yeah.
Oh, cute.
And maybe Dan Levy too, like now that he's becoming more of a star, like throw him in.
We can find him love too. It can be a two for one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
That made me happy.
Happiest season. Absolutely. Two for one.
Yes. 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 So I don't know. Stay
there
tuned, I guess. Hopefully. Okay.
Letterboxed. I'll guess it.
Oh, what is the letterbox?
Let's see if Jordan can guess this letterbox.
I'm going to say people are maybe not as loving as we are. Mm-hmm. I think probably like a three. I'm going to go with like a 3-2.
Final answer?
Final answer.
Bobby, would you care to put in a guess? Not required by any means.
I think just solid 3. Three.
Well, I have good news. One of you is correct.
Oh.
Congratulations to Jordan.
Yes.
It's a 3-2.
It's 3-2.
We love to see it.
Great.
That's kind of nice.
Most people gave it 2.5 or 3 stars, which is a little low, but there's a pretty solid smattering of fives from, I think, people who were like, shut up, I love this movie. I don't know.
I gave it 4.
There you go.
See? That's like a healthy score for it.
Wow. I've got some of some people. I'm looking at the people I follow. I got some gay people giving it 3. Mm-hmm. Some gay people giving it 4. Some bisexual people giving it 1.5 to 2.5.
Oh no.
And very conveniently, a straight person reviewed but did not rate. Interesting.
I have a pretty healthy smattering across the board too. We do have some ones, we have some twos, but we also have
one
some
feels
really
so
is all over the board.
We've got some 4s and some 4.5s as well hanging out.
Is this
like
a litmus test? Just like put this on, but what do you see?
But I think like Bobby made a really good point, and that like plenty of like my queer friends are literally 1 star, and some of them were like, oh my god, like 5 stars. So it's you just gotta vote with how you feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Speaking of vote with how you feel, where is this landing on the queer quadrant for you?
Okay. So on our little QQ scale, I was thinking about this because like, you know, when we deal with explicitly queer movies, that doesn't mean that they're always automatically 5 out of 5 stars.
Sure.
Like you still have to look at them in terms of
Brokeback Mountain, 1 star.
I mean, but like Love, Simon, like 2.5 stars, for example. But I think that like, given what this movie was kind of trying to put forward and how it like it doesn't feel cloying and like despite what qualms people may have about it, I still think it's like a very good story of representation.
Yeah.
And just like in general, I think that I have to give it 5 stars because I don't know that I can find anything at fault with sort of like how I think like the representation was playing out on screen. That's all I'm saying. I don't know, but feel free to completely disagree. Jordan, how are you feeling?
Oh, God. Okay.
But there's no pressure.
No,
you know?
I know.
You don't have to live up to my expectations.
No, yeah. I know I don't need to, but, you know, just like Mackenzie Davis,
you feel the pressure
imagining?
I feel
the pressure of
or
your Victor Garber looking over my shoulder.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I mean, like, it's just, it's kind of, so refreshing, as we talk about a lot, just to see something that is just so aggressively queer, to have like a lot of queer icons behind the camera and in front of the camera is cool.
Yeah.
Clea DuVall said that this was like really personal to her coming out journey, which I think is also potent. And like, that's like, if you have a queer creative trying to tell their story, that's like really cool. And like, who are we to like say poo poo to that, you know?
Yeah.
And like everything we said about the gay best friend, I don't know. The drags,
Wow, this is, I've never seen
sure.
this conflicted.
I'll give it a 5 for Christmas wrapping.
Wow.
5. Sure. 4. I'll go 4.5.
But that was such a journey. Are you sure we're about 4.5?
We'll see. We'll circle back.
Okay, God. All right, Bobby.
I'm toying in my head.
How are you feeling?
I'm giving it a 4.
Okay.
I already gave it a 4, but I think the thing is, like, I'm happy to raise it next Christmas or 2 Christmases from now. Like,
see,
I'm happy to like keep loving this movie even more, but like right now, Christmas 2021, it's a 4, but
I
like a
it.
Solid 4. You know what, the one thing that I think the name is really bad. I think the title is a really bad title.
It's a pretty terrible.
I think they could have done better. With this title.
I think the tagline is also bad.
What's
like
the tagline?
This holiday, come out and meet the family. I just think that it's like there's so many puns that you could do on like gay and coming out and Christmas and holidays, and like it didn't really hit any of them. Marketing
What would you title it? Do you have a soft pitch?
Let's see. I don't know. Let's see. Because I feel like you don't want to call it something explicitly like gay apparel or like.
Right.
Make the Yuletide gay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't have a better pitch.
I don't know, but Happy Season definitely could be workshopped.
It's pretty bland. Yeah. It's pretty bland title. Yeah.
I almost think like not. I mean, Christmas in the Closet is absolutely wrong, but like there are like so many closety jokes to make that I think if you give people like a Word doc and say like fill 2 pages with like Christmas puns, Christmas closet queer puns, like.
Yeah.
There's gonna on that list there will be a better title than Happiest Season. Like if you get quantity out, like something solid will come from that exercise, I think.
And I mean there's that great joke too, which we didn't mention, where Abby like goes into the closet and Mary Steenburgen's like, "Oh my god, Abby, what are you doing in the closet?" And like it's so dumb, but I'm like, that's funny. Like,
yeah.
Ha-ha.
It's the most like expected joke, but the way
but, like,
that she
it
delivers
works.
It, I mean, it's just so great because Kristen Stewart and all her like invisibly gay glory is just staring at her like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I like it.
And just Mary Steenburgen's voice too. She has like such a distinctive pitch on her voice.
She
it's
never
so
misses.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you for sure sticking with your 4.5?
I'm going to stick with 4.5.
Because I think that's
a
good, I think that's, all right. I think that's a very good spread.
You know, we're going up the ladder here.
Yeah.
Just like this,
yeah.
It's time.
The moment you've all been waiting
for. But can you see the sweat dripping off my face? I'm like that Jordan Peele gif that goes around where he's just like profusely sweating.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's me coming into this finals right now.
Because here we are.
Oh my God.
It's the battle you've all been following very closely.
It's the final countdown.
In an ear near.
Of the 4 sodas in miscellaneous divisions.
Yes. So we're back with another round of drink battle.
Here we are. Drink battle 2021.
Very exciting. What drink pairs best for your movie going experience with a nice bag of popcorn and maybe some candy just to round it all out? What is the go-to movie drink? All right.
Where do we stand?
Let's give a little recap. Cream soda.
Oof.
The number 8 seed originally.
The underdog
has been moving through the soda division like a bulldozer,
really
like a buzzsaw, cutting sodas down left and right. Last week, it eliminated Sprite.
It did.
Which was our number 4.
Sprite had no might.
Seed, it is gone, and cream soda is staying strong. Our other competitor in the soda division, root beer.
Those roots were growing. More like Groot?
Also,
more like
root. A little bit of an underdog.
Also an underdog. We have a couple underdogs, I would say, in this. I would say the only one that's kind of a top division is from the miscellaneous division.
Yeah. So on the other side of the bracket.
Top contender, rather. Yeah.
Here we are. We've got the number 2 seed, Red Icy, still going strong. Eliminated water last week. Tough loss.
Number 8, water, H2O. You put up a fight.
But had to be done. And also, remarkably strong, Lemonade.
Lemonade's still surviving. Coming we in have hot. To stand.
That was an interesting original foursome, though, because what was it? Red wine, white wine, seltzer, yeah. and lemonade. Yeah. So
our palates, I would just say, maybe are destroyed.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's so much carbonation happening.
It's fine. We live life.
We got to close it out strong. Okay, we've got
Should we dive in?
The finals of our soda division, cream soda versus root beer.
I'm a little nervous
this
here.
This is a heartbreaker for me.
It is.
All right.
We have emotional ties, I think, to both.
We do.
Here we go.
Okay. I don't think I've ever had root beer and cream soda back to back.
I don't think I have either, and I think it actually...
It's root beer for me.
I think it's root beer for me as well.
Oh, let's go!
Wow, root beer, like, the comparison between the two, like, cream soda is good, but I just think it's, as we've been saying throughout, I think it's a little too sweet.
But it's very sweet, and, like, where it was beating Coke and Dr. Pepper yeah. and, like, all that stuff, like, mowing down, I think that when it comes down to it versus root beer has the balance of the sweet,
I agree.
But a little bit of the kick.
Absolutely, and root beer, like, pairs nicely with the popcorn.
It does.
We have to stand.
It really does. Also, I will just say, even though we love cream soda, it's not as readily accessible as root beer.
Exactly.
So it might be a little bit of a tougher find at your theaters.
So would we say root beer is more of a drink for the people?
Yes.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Cream soda is maybe a little elitist.
Root beer, moving on to the finals.
Moving to the finals.
Oh my
it's
God.
It's what it deserves.
Here
this
we
is
go.
A really good brand too. I've never had it before.
It is.
Teddy's root beer.
Teddy's more like Yeetie's.
I'm usually more of an IBC.
Are you an A&W IBC?
I like an IBC or an A&W. I've never been much for mugs.
I growing up as a mugs person.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know. It's I like the A&W is like very like
it's a classic, yeah.
It's so
it's not
too
Americana.
Sweet, not too chemical.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult.
I mean, if anything, a cane sugar or organic root beer
yeah.
is the
Ooh, so
you know,
good.
The one that
yeah.
hits the most. But look, we have to stand it. Sometimes honestly a flavored root beer can be good, like a cherry root beer
Mm-mm.
can kinda hit or a vanilla root beer.
Don't complicate things.
All right.
Okay.
You like it straight.
We're here.
We get it.
Root beer in the final. I don't like it straight.
That's true.
Okay.
All right, moving on. Miscellaneous division.
Miscellaneous division. Here we go. It's Red Icy versus Lemonade.
Oh
Are you
boy.
Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Here
Let's
we
do
go.
This. What a 1-2 combo we got
Ooh.
There, but
you
I
know?
Think I have my answer.
What's your answer?
I think Red Icy.
I think so, too. It's kind of difficult.
It's a tough one. They have, honestly, sort of similar flavor palettes that
yes.
hit.
What is kind of crazy is that I don't actually remember the last time that I got an Icy at the theater, but every sip that I've had, I'm just reminded, like, it's actually
it's good.
Really good.
I
it's
agree.
So bad for you,
yes.
but, like, it's so good.
I know. That's why my brain is being like, you should never have this again, but also, should you get this every time you go to the movies?
It keeps moving along, you know?
Because
there's a lot
like,
of love in the bracket for it.
God, I really think it are we going to confirm Icy?
Yeah.
Red Icy? Moving on to the finals.
Moving
wow.
on.
Here we go. Okay, so we have our final two, root beer number two. Versus Red Icy
number two.
Wow.
Okay.
So for all of the upsets, it really did boil down to two favorites.
Mm-hmm. But cream soda put up a really good fight.
It did.
A real surprise.
Water
there.
Really tried.
Hey, water made it through the first round.
It did. Honestly, a good shock.
A good shock. That blue icy. I can't
That
get
blue
over.
Icy
it
was
so
ooh.
Bad. so here we are.
Here we go.
And you know,
do you have
it's
a prediction?
Well, okay, so the Red Icy is ostensibly cherry flavored.
Yes.
And although this isn't cherry root beer, I think it has that sort of like semi sweetness type
like, yeah, flavor to
vibe
it.
To it. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're gonna see some
the
interesting
aromas.
Flavors come
yeah.
through. Okay.
All right. Are
you
ready to do this?
Yes.
Let's do it. Here
oh
we
wait.
Go.
Well, I'll just say.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say it before we make our decision.
Sure.
Let's
Are try. You sure? Do you want to say it now?
Okay, sure.
Say
so,
it now.
So, if you remember from last year, we
yeah.
had a bit of a contentious final.
We did.
Where we had to flip a coin.
We did.
Because we disagreed and neither of us could talk the other
dramatic.
One over to their side.
It was.
And as you all know, expert fans, Cookie Dough Bites ended up coming out on top. So,
as
let's see
should.
If we had to flip a coin
wow.
again.
The drum roll.
On. The
Here we
on.
Go.
Okay. Jordan's trying the root beer. I'm trying the Red Icy.
This is a tough
This is actually
final.
Really hard.
Can I go another round of both? Is that fine?
Yeah, of course.
I think I need to try both again.
Okay.
Okay. I just had the Red
processing,
Icy.
Processing.
I'm thinking. I'm letting it sit. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay. Where's that landing on your palate? I like it. Sure.
Burning off your taste buds.
Okay.
All right. I feel like this is probably not a huge surprise, but
I
when
think,
it comes down.
Do you want to do on the count of three?
Okay.
Okay. Ready?
One,
two,
three.
Root beer.
Oh!
Yeah!
Yep.
Nice. We love to see it.
When it comes down to the chemical content,
yeah,
the root beer just came out ahead. It feels
so
more
too.
Natural. It feels more organic and like no shade to movie theater popcorn.
Absolutely
but
not.
There's a little bit of some artificial butter flavoring on there.
Of course.
And I think that the root beer balances it out nicely, whereas the icy might just heighten the fact that you're eating just
chemicals.
So many
right.
chemicals.
I think honestly too of root beer kind of has that like classic flavor to it where you're like, it could be at an indie rep theater.
Yeah.
It could be at a major chain. No matter where you're going, there could be a root beer. Whereas Icy does sort of tend
it's
to
modern,
just live with the chains.
And it's a little tent pole, you know? And
right,
to
exactly.
me, it's like a root beer is kind of a nice old fashioned drink.
Yeah.
So you kind of feel like you're in the heyday of cinema with
I
a root
agree.
Beer and some popcorn.
Yeah.
It's just really
and root
good.
Beer kind of has like a four quadrant appeal, should we say, as the queer quadrant. Like
I
root
mean,
beer kind of
yeah.
hits for everyone.
And also, but it's like a little special. It's a
it
little
is.
Elevated.
It's a treat.
It's not our number one seed of Coca-Cola.
No, no,
I think
no.
we only seeded it as high as we did because we knew that we both really like it.
Right, right.
So, and like, obviously that was a good decision because it's pulled out.
Right, came through.
Top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that was
wow.
dramatic.
That was very
I'm so
dramatic.
Glad that we both agree, though.
Yeah.
Wow, it did not end in a coin flip.
It did not.
But rather a taste bud flip.
Mm.
I mean, I will say, though,
it's good.
That Cherry
I'm
Icy
happy.
Put up a fight.
It did. It did. And, like, I'm surprised. I will have to stay away from them for, like, the good of
yes.
my health. But
yep.
really good. I would say if you're in the mood for a special occasion, maybe try an Icy. If you,
I agree.
If you have AMC Stubs and you've got your free large drink coming
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Go for an Icy. Be
right.
adventurous. But for every day and honestly for special occasions too, because it's just that good.
Mm-hmm.
We're all
it's got to go
root
beer. Congratulations, root beer. You have won the 2021 Queer Quadrant Bracket.
Drink. Battle. Thank you all
yeah.
for participating. If
please
you
vote.
Think that we did something wrong, I've got good news for you. The audience bracket is available right now on Twitter, and you can look it up and vote on your personal
vote
favorites.
Your hearts out. Campaign.
Yeah.
Hit the streets.
You deserve it.
Absolutely.
It's very important.
And we'll announce both winners, so everyone will find out who wins.
Of course.
Yeah.
Must. Very important. Anyway, go in, get those votes in, and thanks for another year.
Oh my God. Stay tuned for next year. Who knows what we have cooking in that kitchen?
It's going to be so great. And yes, because this is maybe our chance to say how thankful we are
right.
for our listeners and for the podcast in general. It's been a gift. It's been a present, Jordan.
Brooke, it's been a present to be in your presence.
Can you believe we're rounding our second year on the podcast?
That's kind of actually wild.
I guess
to
it's
me.
Technically a year and a half, but like
yeah.
our second Christmas.
But
on
like our
Mike.
Second Christmas together. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh my God, we're getting so old.
I know. Time is just flying by.
Oh my God. But I'm so thankful we have our listeners. We have
yes,
each other.
It's everything.
'Tis the season for appreciation.
Mm-hmm. And we've got some amazing stuff planned for
absolutely.
2022.
I mean, like, look, we're really putting the pedal to the metal to start the year, so.
Yes, and we're going to put the pedal to the metal at a later time in the year.
Oh.
Wink,
wink.
Wink.
Vroom, vroom.
Hell yeah.
Vroom, 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 vroom.
So tune in for all of that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday and a happy new year.
Absolutely. Brooke, same to you, though.
Thanks.
To our listeners and also to you.
Thanks, man. So I feel like I now have to reveal this because we have both episodes in the can. So it's only confusing
for people
listening. Yes. But Bobby, in a few weeks, we have an episode coming out with the incomparable Emily Vandewerf. And we started talking about Happiest Season. We were like, well, we technically have an episode on that came out a couple weeks ago, but we haven't recorded it yet. So why don't you give us your thoughts on Mike? And we told her that you were the guest that was joining us. And she had nothing but lovely things to say about you and said that she really hoped
so
that you had the same thoughts about Happiest Season as she did, which, spoiler alert,
true.
You do. And we all do.
Oh, she liked
so
it too? Great. Oh my gosh.
She yes. loves it. But I wanted
Emily
to tell you
because Emily has fantastic taste.
The best.
I mean, if you like Happiest Season, you automatically have good taste.
You're a friend
so.
Of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, it's very good that you guys did have the same taste, because Emily said that if you didn't, there would be maybe a fight to the death involved, or some sort of like very public reckoning. Yeah. So consider yourself.
No, I'm relieved. I feel vindicated. Like, I feel more comfortable with my opinion knowing that Emily also liked it. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Emily's talk about a great litmus test. Basically, yeah. Like, if Emily trusts the movie, I trust the movie.
I love it.
Yeah. Bobby, thank you so much for being here.
Well, of course. Thanks for asking me. This was so much fun. I'm so glad I got to talk about this more. Like, I forgot how much I like talking about Happiest Season. So, you know, let's do it again next year.
Absolutely. Oh,
we return every year only
see
to
how
talk
our
about
opinions
Happiest
have
season.
Changed.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it'll be great to track like over a 10-year period or something.
It is
awesome.
Honestly, absolutely. Very cool, as you were saying, like to like see a movie start to come into the rotation. Like, having watched it this year, I'm like, well, maybe. And like to actually see how a Christmas classic does develop is cool.
Yeah, it's great. We look forward to seeing how it continues to evolve.
Yeah.
And Bobby,
I hope you like Family Stone, because I like it more every single year. So
that's really
like
good to know. Yeah. And you know, fingers crossed, it'll probably be on the holiday 2022 docket.
Seeing as there's no gay Christmas movies.
Seeing as we've already gotten to the bottom of the very shallow barrel.
Rudolph, is that gay? I think so.
Jordan did text me in a panic, an excited panic last year, being like, we can cover Rudolph. I have thoughts. Like, I have
There's
a
totally
pitch.
A gay take on Rudolph.
So, you know, I hope everyone looks forward to the sweaty Christmas rundown that we have
next year.
Every year. Bobby, you are the greatest. And if people want to see more of your work and check you out, which obviously they should, where should they find you and what are you up to?
They should follow me. I have to start tweeting more starting in the future, so I'll start tweeting again at Bobby Finger on Twitter and at Bobby Finger on Instagram. I'll start Instagramming more over the next like month, so you'll see me there if you follow me, and then also listen to Who Weekly wherever you're listening to this podcast. Okay,
yes,
wherever listen you listen to Queer Quadrant, listen to Who Weekly.
Oh, a great podcast we cannot recommend enough.
Yes, yes. I have friends who are like huge stans that I didn't know until I started talking to them, and they were like, I'm obsessed with Who Weekly, and I was like, oh my god, okay.
Ooh, hello.
That's
I
awesome.
Had no idea. So just know you have
great.
Very intense fans out there. Awesome. Yeah, you know, we're also on the internet, not as exciting, but you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant. And this podcast is indeed basically everywhere. Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts.
Anywhere. Under your Christmas tree.
You like to get your podcast. Thank you for another wonderful year of listening to us.
Absolutely.
We really appreciate it.
Yes.
You know, you can drop us, if you want to give us a little Christmas present, drop us a rate, drop us a review, drop us a subscribe. Tweet at us, tell us your thoughts about the Happiest Season discourse.
Yes.
You can thirst over Aubrey Plaza with me. I would welcome it. And let us know what you might like to see us cover in the future as well.
What do we have cooking next month?
Well,
because not next week.
It's the end of the year, so we are in classic exec Hollywood fashion, taking 2 weeks off, and we will be back in your ears January 7th, 2022, with a whole week of films covering...
A whole month of films
on the directors of Lana and Lily Wachowski.
Woo.
So it's a whole Wachowski month. We are... prepping for Matrix Resurrections. We are digging into these incredible filmmakers and their very weird, often polarizing, but also often great work. And we're kicking it off with what else but The Matrix, the 1999 original. Don't know. You'll just have to wait and listen.
Be sure to plug in. Right.
Yeah. And also, spoiler for that episode, since we already recorded it, I recorded it when I had the flu and I have no voice. So hopefully look forward to that. Actually, it sounds better
you
than
sound
I'm,
great.
Than I'm
Brooke,
making
you always
it sound.
Sound great.
But yeah. So anyway, just warning everyone. There we go. If that's not a tease for the new year, I don't know what is.
It is.
Yeah.
And is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Always remember, Aubrey Plaza, my DMs are open.